Welcome, welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
Do you hear that, Ern? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, your number one audio source for Harry Potter news, theories, discussion, as well as info straight from the makers of the books and films themselves, like me, Matt Lewis. I play Neville Longbottom in the Harry Potter films, and I'm very happy to be here helping introduce your hosts, the Pottercast trio, Melissa, John, and Sue.
Still reeling from last week's time-turner conversation, we're back with Pottercast number 73.
Let's go back in time and finish 72.
I know, I want to go back and talk about it more.
In the show, we have for you lots of fun theory discussion, but first of all, we have to hear from our friends at Borders.
Today's Pottercast is brought to you by Borders. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows is coming soon, but when? Click on the Borders banner at the top of Pottercast.com homepage, sign up, and you'll be among the first to learn the release date of the final book in the series. You can also reserve your copy of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows at any Borders store. Find a store near you at BorderStores.com.
BorderStores.com.
March 31st.
Not March 31st, not August 9th, not
what?
7707, not 7/31/07, not December 1st, not October 31st. It could be any of those dates. Or a different one.
So we shouldn't say that it's not. We just say we're it's, not
well,
sure.
Well, we don't know yet. Yeah. And we'll have more about that later because plenty of you took our blog challenge for Sirius last week. It is once again time to vote for us at Podcast Alley. But now we have a new thing that you can do called Dig. I don't know if you guys are technology savvy, but there's a site called Dig where people can sort of vote for articles that they like, and the more votes you get, the higher it gets ranked.
Yes.
You can now dig podcasts. So if you like podcasts, you sign up for a little account the same way you did with Podcast Alley, and you dig it. So we'll provide that link in the notes, and we'll be annoying you every week from now on out.
Yes.
Quick announcement, reminder, we will be at the Phoenix Rising convention in New Orleans. We'll have a live podcast on May 17th.
Oh, yeah.
You sign up for Phoenix Rising at thephoenixrises.org. You will be able to get into that. To that live podcast, the Brian from Draco and the Malfoys and the Whomping Willows will be performing live at that event, and we will also be presenting two panels over the course of the convention, one on fan podcasting and one about fan journalism. Right, that one, right.
The response to the heckling request has been astronomical. I'll be organizing the newsletter for that planning process shortly.
I remind you that any hecklers you gather will be heckling you. I'm just giving you a reminder.
Not what they've been writing.
Mm-hmm. Also, our latest issue of Scribulous, our essay section, is now online, number 12. The next topic that we're asking for for our next edition is papers on unfogging Deathly Hallows, but all papers on all subjects are encouraged. Any essay you want to write is encouraged and welcomed, but we're specifically looking for Deathly Hallows topics. You can get to Scribulous, by the way, at Scribulous.com. It goes right to our section on Leaky.
I have a great idea for an essay that I don't think anybody's thought of yet.
Oh, no.
Well, you think about that.
What if the Deathly
really...
Hallows are horcruxes?
Okay. Sue, how about we do your news and you save us from dropping on original thought?
Brilliant thought. I don't know how to follow that. Okay.
Well, we should call this the Potter product edition of the news, as we have a whole host of new items to tell you about. TLC was able to get a first look at the many new items being released this year as part of the tie-in with the upcoming Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix film. Things we can expect this year include the following. A new Dumbledore's Army logo, which will be used on new items such as binders, books, and much more. New trading cards and stickers, and we saw first looks at the Thestrals, Death Eaters, Ministry of Magic, and Fudge, and more. There will be a new Harry Potter DVD scenic game featuring new movie clips and a FlexTime game board. A talking Dobby doll. There will be Great Hall and Room of Requirement play sets. A Lucius Malfoy mask with, quote, voice-changing features, end quote. Other new items include new Dark Art desk calendars, sticker, coloring, and guidebooks, stationery, calligraphy sets, snow globes, keychains, bookends, badges, mugs, and much more. Wow. The first wave will launch by early June, with the second batch due in September of 2007. Leaky was also able to show you our first look at the new costumes, which are being released later this fall, including ones of Mad-Eye Moody, Voldemort, the Death Eaters, and one, rather intriguing mask of Professor Dumbledore. There was also good news for LEGO fans, as the first of the new Order of the Phoenix sets has now surfaced, showing a new rendition of Hogwarts Castle, which is due to be available late August. Cards, Inc. also previewed another action figure this week, this one of Mad-Eye Moody and his very cool broom he uses to fly with the Order. And finally, we also saw a new Malfoy and Dobby dolls as well. Wow. Quite a list of things to look forward to this year indeed. You can click on LeakyNews.com for much more information and see many of these items in our galleries. Another film-related news now. Warner Brothers has released a high-res photo of Dan Radcliffe as Harry Potter from the upcoming Order of the Phoenix movie. This new photo shows Harry standing beside the Hogwarts Express train. This photo was included as part of a new short preview that ran in the USA Today newspaper recently, where director David Yates is quoted as speaking about things such as the centaurs, the thestrals, and even Grock. One quick book note this week to tell you about. As expected, the woman in Georgia has filed an appeal of her previously denied attempts to ban the Harry Potter novels. Laura Mallory is continuing in her attempts to ban the beloved books from school shelves and now claims she has received financial backing to help her on her quest. Huh. Well, for all things Harry Potter, you can always find it at LeakyNews.com, which is updated continually. You know, I think we should call this podcast the product, like, Pottercast goes to FAO Schwartz with all that news about products, man. I mean,
good. Lots of new stuff.
Holy smoke-a-rollies. I don't even...
My favorite being John's favorite, which is...
Oh, yes. That thing.
Dead.
Oh, my.
That.
Silence! Check
There's
out
a
my
new
hair!
Mask on Ruby's costumes of Dumbledore, and it seems to be the version of the Michael Gambon Dumbledore, and it seems to be as true to the character as the Michael Gambon character is to the books. He's like got Barbie hair, and it's crimped, and he looks like he was patched together by blind mice or something. This is terrible. He looks like a woodwork figure. It's bad. Oh, Ruby's.
Meanwhile,
man.
Go ahead and go buy it.
Yeah, it means I'll go buy it. Well, I mean,
who wants to braid my hair?
It's just so, I mean, when you click on it, it's one of the things you actually have to see to believe. You really do.
John was laughing hysterically at it last night, and I said, wait, I'll go look at it, and I couldn't
There's
control it.
There's just no words to describe the brilliance of that latex mask.
Someday I'll be a real headmaster.
Yes.
Okay,
but
I will be wearing it to all of the podcasts.
In the pretty area, there is new dolls from Tonner who make really nice Harry Potter dolls.
Sure,
yeah. There's a Malfoy doll. It's nice.
Yeah, what
sort of.
It looks. You know, there was great discussion over the color of the robes. There are like an emerald green. They're not, or I don't know, light green. They aren't quite Slytherin-y, traditionally
not that,
green.
That.
Right.
Hunter D.
Right. You know how they always screw up is the Gryffindor colors. They always make it like this weird purple or something.
Purple,
right.
Yeah. You know why? Because
purple.
I actually got an answer on that once because I asked Warner Brothers, what the heck? You know, and they said that it's actually the color that they use in the films, that they use for lighting purposes, that comes out differently on film. But when you sell them in a store, they look purple.
Yeah.
You know?
That's
so
crazy.
It is.
So they do have some scarves that are the real red.
Oh, they just use a bunch of bright yellow lights in the film?
I don't know.
Orange,
I mean, it's possible. It may be an old way of doing it that they don't do anymore because they do have those really nice, long scarves now that really were from the film.
Yeah.
You know, I saw recently that I was not aware of is that the Noble Collection sells the scarves and the ties.
Yes. Yes, they do. And we have them in our shop. They have a very nice, very fine quality.
They have very fine quality.
Mm-hmm. Nice Gryffindor tie and scarf. Yeah.
I also found the coolest thing ever in there that I'd never seen before recently is this ring for Slytherin.
Uh-huh.
It's like got diamonds in it and like white gold. I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah, they have that one.
What kind of you when you
can get
that, man? Yeah. That's
a $300 ring.
If I ever, you know, get married, that's what I want, you know, my wedding band to be.
Uh-huh.
That's what I decided.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
When you marry Pansy Parkinson.
I am not Pansy nothing.
No, but
well, okay, we do have a little bit of movie excitement. We have a new picture.
Right.
Of who?
Mr. Dan Radcliffe.
Oh, Dan.
And he's
that picture looks like
Express.
That picture looked strange to me.
Well, but no, but he's wearing a gray hood thing, and I don't know if it's when he's gone back after the attack on Grimmauld Place or something. I don't know, but it just looks like there's a bunch of muggles or normal, non-magical folk.
Something looks different about him. It almost looked like that was like the video game version, like that was like a model or something.
It's a very clear, highly defined picture. Right. It's really sharp.
Yeah.
But this is definitely when he goes to Hogwarts, because, well, clearly the Hogwarts Express train is there, but we saw the video of him talking with Sirius. He's wearing the same outfit.
Right.
And they must be speaking in the Muggle stop before he gets on the train about whether there's going to be a war and, and all those things. Mm. So, yeah, that is his I go to Hogwarts outfit.
Nice.
You know.
But
what is a backwoods giant baby?
I don't know. That comment came from Mr. Yates, which when we saw the new picture in the USA Today, and Mr. Yates made these comments, and I think he's talking about
Grop.
Right.
He said a backwoods giant baby and Hagrid's half brother, meaning Grop. But I guess they're talking about like uncultured, and he's sort of like a child. You have to look after him, but it's just a weird turn of phrase.
It's just like a backwoods, rural. It's a colloquial kind of, you know. I don't always use it as a very complimentary. Or when I hear that, I don't view that as a complimentary phrase personally. But
well, I'm glad that Tony's getting all this press.
It's your friend.
He is.
We're
bowling partners.
Uh huh. Right.
It's a long trip to get to that alley for me, but I make it dutifully.
Speaking of non-complimentary things, I can't say one non-complimentary thing about this next news item, about the woman in Georgia.
My favorite lady in the world.
She's like a weeble.
She is. Miss Mallory we knew this was coming. She said she was going to, but she said that now that she has gotten, Laura Mallory is going to appeal yet again her decision about trying to get the Potter books banned. And it's just,
when I read
at
that,
what point do we stop reporting this?
Is she doing that with a straight face now? Is she just like, here I go again, everybody look over here? I mean, just, how can you keep a straight face with that?
But at what point do we stop reporting? Are we just feeding this? Are we just, by people reporting, can we just leave her alone already and let her do what she has to do and not care?
You know, I actually did consider that. I actually weighed that I had that conversation with myself. I mean, do we not, you know, but...
Actually, you know what? I heard that there's actually a lot of response to this. I talked to my good friends over at EA, Donna and his friends and all those guys, and they said there's a hidden boss in the new Order of Phoenix game. If you get all these Berry Bots beans, you can duel Laura Mallory in the game, and she doesn't have a wand because she doesn't think it's right, so you just totally smoke her every time. And it's really fun.
You know, that's so sick, and not even worth laughing at, but it's rather hilarious, though, too.
To imagine the Laura Mallory video game.
Terrible.
Terrible.
And you have, like, this Donkey Kong music come out of nowhere, like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and she just comes up from, like, the chamber.
I imagine her as a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, sort of like...
That is one of the greatest of all,
like,
movie
unavoidable.
Villains. I love that one.
Seriously. Okay. The unavoidable thing, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
She just does not go away.
Big, slow, heavy footsteps.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I'm coming, watch out, with the Harry Potter book in hand.
Blimey, Harry. What's that? It's Lord Mallory.
That's one. No, he goes blimey. That's one big woman in the fourth movie.
One big idiot.
Okay.
Yes, magnifique.
I wish that God would grant her with some serenity. Honestly, that she needs to get over it. Everybody else sees the truth here, and you know. So, anyway, do we really need to talk about Joe being number two on the Forbes?
No. I mean, it's just, I hate Forbes. They always come up with these lists. They're endless. They're the same thing over and over again.
So annoying.
I know.
Joe's got some
Joe's
bones.
Rich. Surprise.
Yeah.
She's rich.
Shock.
Yay.
Is it possible that, like, the most number one selling book author in, like, the history of the planet actually has a lot of money? I would have never thought that. Thanks, Forbes.
Yeah. Thanks, Forbes, for letting us know. All right, well... I think it's time that we... Oh, okay, no. We have to let you know what's going to happen at the end of the show. A little bit different from usual. We have our fan interview. Our Canon Conundrums this week is not as expected on religion because we wanted to wait and make that a more worthwhile discussion. We'll have some more information about why that is in the Canon Conundrums this week, which is about why Voldemort went after Amelia Bones, Emmeline Vance, in
Tony Mosley.
Before,
no.
And Tony Mosley before Book Six. There, it's about why he targeted those specific people, and actually, it turned up some pretty interesting discussion.
We had the
but what we will be talking about when we come back from the Canon Conundrums is the reaction from last week's show, because there was a theory submitted by listener Angela in last week's show that Harry will be the one to tell Dumbledore what happened at Godric's Hollow, because he'll go back in time and have to stop himself from stopping Voldemort from killing his parents.
Yeah.
It incited, I mean, the emails and the voicemails and the messages and the blog posts.
We've been getting injunctions in the mail from those people saying, stop talking about this.
Yeah.
You're giving too much of my book away.
No.
We wanted to talk about some of your reaction and address some points, so we will do that after Canon Conundrums.
Yes.
Canon Conundrums.
All right, well, I can't wait anymore for this fan interview. I've been waiting for this for about 4 weeks. So let's push on to it.
All right, see ya.
In the Fan Corner, a one-on-one interview with a new lucky fan each week.
Not me, not Hermione, you.
Hi everyone, this is Doris Herman, and with me today for our fan interview is Francisca Solar. Francisca is the author of a Harry Potter fan fiction called Harry Potter and the Decline of the High Elves. And after she wrote her fan fiction, it was seen by publishers of Random House, and she was offered a book deal. Her book, I'm going to mispronounce this, La Septima M, is out, and you can purchase it on Amazon.com. Hello, Francisca. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. Thanks for contacting me.
Oh, it's truly my pleasure, actually. Now, for all of our Spanish-speaking friends out there, could you please pronounce your book the right way?
It's La Séptima M.
Thank you very much. My Spanish is not nearly as good as it should be, obviously.
It's okay.
I found your story so fascinating because you, like thousands, you know, probably millions of fan fiction writers out there, you wrote a fan fiction, and somebody noticed you and said, wow, this is great. What do you think that does to the world of fan fiction writers?
I think of myself just a fan. I'm just a fan. Like I said, I am a fan with an insane fascinating with words. That's a very, very well description of me. I've been writing fan fiction for 10 years, so this is not new for me. I published The Decline of the High Elves 3 years ago, and I'm still receiving so many mails, and that I feel flattered. I don't know how to take it. I am feeling just like a fan, just another fan as a millions out there. And I'm trying to understand why my fan fiction is so special. I never expected such a love response for all fanfic readers around. I suppose I'm getting used to it. I feel really flattered.
Now, we talked a little bit before the interview about using fan fiction as sort of a springboard for young writers who are just getting started. Tell me, why do you think that's a good thing to do? What are the benefits to the beginning writer?
Well, I owe it everything to the fanfiction world. It was my school of writing. I recommend it with all my heart. I've been 10 years in this, and there's no other way that I can reach the editorial world. I mean, fanfiction is the kind of place to develop your fascination with letters. Letters were always my life, but I never wanted to show that to the world. I'm too shy for that. So internet was the perfect place to show my text. I always had readers, but never the number that I have now. When I started to write this fanfic of Harry Potter, I had no expectations. It was just another fanfiction like a millions. But I was trying to express all my theories about the saga and all my complaints and all the thoughts that I had about the characters and about the plots. And people seem to understand that I was doing a really serious work. I mean, I took fanfiction real serious because I think that is a serious practice. I don't feel that fanfiction, I don't know, is a minor practice or is I know, of course, it's an amateur practice, but I feel fanfiction is the great place to start writing. I reach the editorial world through it, so if I can do it, anyone can do it.
Now, the fanfiction that you wrote, Harry Potter and the Decline of the High Elves, was written after you read Order of the Phoenix. What brought about your desire to write this fan fiction?
When I read The Order of the Phoenix, I had so high expectations. This fifth book is so important in the saga because the fifth book, it turned to be a transition between the Harry boy and the Harry adolescent or adult. It had to be like that, but I feel that this fifth book failed on that matter. I felt that fifth book was, I don't know, childish. Harry was so childish, so hormonal, and I wanted more. I feel really disappointed because it is a huge book, almost 900 pages. I wanted more, and when I finished to read it, I feel empty. I needed more, so I started to think about my fanfiction intensely.
Now, when you write fanfiction, you mentioned earlier that in a way it was kind of your way to honor the writer as well.
Yes, I thought about fanfiction as a tribute to the original author, to the original product, you know. I love the Harry Potter saga. I am just fascinated with J.K. Rowling's work. So when I started to write my fan fiction, my goal was to say to the world, Harry Potter is great. I never thought that I was going to appear to the exposure of the world. We fanfic writers, we do fanfiction as a tribute. So we never expected glory for ourselves. I never expected that. And I'm still doing fanfiction like that. I am, like I said, I'm too shy for being, I don't know, a celebrity. I've been writing about other characters, about other author characters of my life, and I feel comfortable with that. Now that I'm developing my own characters, my own books, there's completely another experience. But I think I'm liking it. I'm really enjoying it. It's a completely different path to make your own characters, to develop your own books. It's really hard. It's not easy to do a book. So I am really, really flattered with all the good comments that arrive to my email every day.
Mm-hmm. Now let's go on and talk a little bit about your novel. Your novel is one of five, correct?
Yes.
And the first one is based on a true story.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about it.
Okay. Well, it is based in a Chilean story. In 2002, 12 teenagers committed suicide in a southern town in Chile. The case remains unsolved to this day. I was so interested in that I traveled to this town, and I talked to the people there, and I meet the victim's friends and family. The atmosphere in this town was so depressed, so dark. It reminds me the towns of Stephen King novels, and that was so interesting that I started to develop the story, this 7M, And when the editorials call me and want me to work with them, I presented them a project of 5 books that each one of those is based on a true unsolved story. The first one, the 7th M, is based on a Chilean story, but the other ones are based on cases that happens in other places in the world. The second book that I'm writing in this very moment, the second book, it took place in Colombia, for example.
Now, you've said in your books that you're using a paranormal element.
Yes.
Exactly how are you doing that?
Well, I always love the paranormal phenomena. I'm still a huge fan of the X-Files, and I love the way they present that topic. That's what I wanted to do all my life. And when I'm writing about paranormal phenomena, I always thinking that I wanted the reader to think that this could be happening. I mean, I always put a foot in reality. I like the paranormal phenomena with a view of reality too. I believe that paranormal phenomena is into normality too. Paranormal phenomena is in our reality and we cannot deny it. So, I took some serious cases and I turned it in a novel, but with a lot of linked to reality, to cases that really happens, and for example, and in this novel, in the 7th M, I talk about many cases that really happened in Chile and in the world. I talk about, I don't know, the war in Iraq, and I talk about Bush, and I talk about the president of Chile, and I talk about about what happens in Latin America. I mean, I took the paranormal phenomena, but I like it to put into reality, because, like I said, I want the reader to think that it could happen to them.
That's fascinating. Now, how are you going to feel a few years from now if someone is writing fan fiction with your work?
Oh my God, so much people are saying this to me. Well, I'll be flattered, of course, but I think it will be fascinating because it is the circle of life. You know, I started to write fan fiction from others' characters, from other authors' characters, and now that I am a writer, some kids are going to write fan fiction about my book. I mean, I don't know. It is fascinating how sounds it. I'm looking forward to it. I'll be so flattered. I'll be honored.
Now, will you read it?
Yes, of course. I think Rowling actually read fan fiction. So why I'm not? I mean, I love the fan fiction as a practice. I think it's a very good practice for all those who want to write, who want to be writers. So if anybody do a fan fiction about my book, of course I'm going to read it if I had time, and if the author contact me, of course I'm going to read it.
Now, La Septime M.A., I'm going to get this right someday, is currently in Spanish,
yeah.
And it's going to be translated into Polish and Portuguese. Is that correct?
Yes, it is correct.
Now, what about English? Do you have an editor yet? Are you looking for someone to put it in English for you?
I'm looking for someone in this very moment. After all this huge thing that the BBC turned on, I'm looking for an English editorial, because I think the English market is so huge and so important. I'm looking into it. I already had, well, a Polish editorial and a Portuguese editorial, but I think my second book is better. It's even better than the 7M. So I hope then that when the English editorials read this second book, they're going to offer me something. I'm looking into it. I'm hoping that an English editorial appears soon.
Wonderful. Well, I know everybody looks forward to reading it. I have ordered it myself, and I'm hoping to get it soon. Luckily, I can read a little bit of Spanish. Thank you so much for chatting with us today, Francisca. I know that fan fiction writers everywhere probably right now are cheering that here is a fan fiction writer who fan fiction writing in and of itself is such a successful habit, and now a fan fiction writer gone to publish their own book. That's wonderful.
Like I said before, if I can do it, anyone can do it. I am not that special. I'm just a fan, just a huge fan, and what I did, it's my passion. Writing is my passion, and I know that out there are so many really good fanfic writers. Just take the chance. Live your dream. I am a living dream, you know. I am the example that dreams come true. So again, if I can do it, anyone can do it.
Great. Thank you. And on that note, if you'd like to purchase her book, it is available on Amazon.com UK. And thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
And everyone, thank you and have a wonderful day.
And now it's time for Canon Conundrums. Listen in as our panel tries to figure out one specific issue from the Harry Potter canon.
Who could possibly figure that out?
And we're back with Canon Conundrums. Ooh. 73. Here we are.
Our good friend Jason here has entered the PC studio.
Yep. Just flew in.
Boy, his arm's tired. Yeah. Yuck, yuck. Okay.
Helicopter's still outside.
And the guru mobile. Yeah. Kind of zoomed in. Yeah.
Well, many of you have been looking forward to this Canon Conundrums. However, we have some good news and some bad news, guys.
Aww.
What do you want first?
Bad news.
The bad news to make the good news better.
Well, the bad news is that awesome Canon Conundrums topic about religion and Harry Potter and cupcakes will have to wait for another week. Because here's the good news. We have managed to find a way to make that Canon Conundrums even cooler than it was going to be.
Yeah.
But we just need a tiny bit more preparation.
Well, what happened is that we all sat around about to do this Canon Conundrum. We realized that we are the least qualified people. It's a matter of not wanting to disrespect the topic by not having enough authority on the topic. So can we announce it? Can we say what's going on?
Better not.
If we don't think we're qualified to have the conversation, why do they think they're going to listen to it?
Because they don't look to us for religious matters. They look to us for theories and stuff.
They sure do.
That's different. Anyway, we wanted to make it just a little bit better. So we invited Connie Neal. She's been writing books about religion and Harry Potter almost since the Harry Potter came out. She will add so much to the conversation and will make it such a better discussion that we're going to hold that topic until she can be with us, which will be soon.
Yes, and we will be moderating that debate in the other corner.
No.
Don't I wish.
She'll be joining us.
I wish.
We'd love to have Miss Mallory on. That'd be interesting interview.
It would be fair. It would. She'd get her chance to say her piece, and we'd get
awkward.
Our chance to show her she's wrong, and, you know, it would be great.
Yes.
Anyway.
And I would go after everything she said. It would
put a little sound effect.
Womp, womp, womp. Yes.
I really hope she's not listening to this right now. In her decision as to whether to come on Potter.
Yeah, like if she says, well, let me listen to one before I go on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, well, it would be fair and good one. And adult. But,
Oh, really? We are the voice of the...
Old people.
Feel comfortable.
We consider us the
elders. We're not the ones who've been prank calling you.
Yeah. Okay. So, what are we talking about this week?
Oh, yeah, so this week.
Well, Jason is being Vandy this week, so why don't you tell us what the
topic is, Jason? Well, then I better bring my voice down here.
That's pretty nice, actually. Almost accurate.
Yeah. Why did Voldemort and the Death Eaters go after the particular people they did in Book 6?
And which people are we talking about here?
Emmeline, or however you say that name, Vance.
Emmeline
and
Vance.
Amelia Bones.
So who wants to give us the rundown on Amelia Bones from our trusty Harry Potter lexicon?
Amelia Bones, auntie of Susan Bones, the only other random person to be sorted in the first film, other than our lead.
Has nothing to do with her being Christopher Columbus.
So she's actually related to
Absolutely
Christopher Columbus.
Absolutely nothing to do with
Amelia
it.
Amelia Bones is like his sister or something.
Amelia Bones. Well, yeah, she was the head of the law enforcement.
Right.
For the ministry. And she was also head of the Wizengamot. And she was also, head of the people who were, prosecuting Harry during his little, trial at the ministry.
Right.
And number 5. And she's got real short gray hair and a monocle and...
She knows she looks like Colonel Mustard.
Yeah.
And the kids
she looks
the
like
night.
A lot of weird-looking people.
All right, well, yeah. let's talk but about why, what's important that she was killed.
Well, Tonks said that she was fair and honest and that she was murdered very nastily by the Death Eaters in the first weeks that Voldemort had officially returned, between 5 and 6. Muggle newspapers reported...
she was killed...
What?
From Voldemort.
No, that's Emily Vance.
Because she was hardcore.
No,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Fudge thinks that Voldemort killed her personally.
Right. He thinks, but it's unconfirmed, so all we know is that it's...
What does Fudge know?
Because we heard this from... Fudge is telling the Muggle Prime Minister this, as proof that Voldemort has returned, and he's trying to warn him.
Well, now remember... Well, before we go on about that, let's talk about Emmeline Vance quickly. She was a member of the Order of the Phoenix. She was part of the guard that took Harry from Four Privet Drive to Grimmauld Place. She's described as stately-looking with an emerald-green shawl, also nastily murdered by Death Eaters in the first week of the war. They reported them at the same time as Amelia, at least it was reported to Fudge, to the Muggle Prime Minister. Snape claimed to Bellatrix that he was the one who betrayed her, and the murder occurred near number 10 Downing Street, which is where the Prime Minister lives. Muggle Prime Minister.
Oh.
So, but to go back to that Fudge believes the murder was carried out by Voldemort of Amelia Bones, we know that Sirius makes a comment in Book 5 that his brother wasn't important enough to be murdered by Voldemort.
Right.
So we know that to be murdered by Voldemort is almost a perverse sort of honor.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, but why do you think he would, you know, bother killing her? That's what intrigues me.
Right. Was she
that is the conundrum.
A special target, or was he trying to get anyone he could? In which case, why couldn't he get any more? Yeah, I mean, was there a certain reason they wanted to get her out of the way, or was it just like, oh, well, she's going to be one of the people who will fight against us, so we'll take her out if we can?
Well, she was the head of the Department of Magical Law Enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
For what reason could he have to get rid of the Department of Magical Law Enforcement?
Well, help instill fear and confusion. If you want to... You know, if he's going to, Voldemort and his operates on a campaign of fear, so if he wants to cause, you know, confusion and disorganization, what way better way than to take the head out, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
she's basically the police commissioner of wizards.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if you kill the police commissioner, you prove to whatever law enforcement body there is that there's nobody stronger than
Voldemort. That's a good point.
Well, I mean, I think that the pattern here, what looks like Voldemort is doing is going after the government straight away. And that's, like the first wave of his little plan is to just destabilize them and to, preemptively screw up any of their attempts at mobilizing and organizing against Voldemort.
Right.
I mean, it's a smart move.
Well, speaking of that, I'm interested that we don't know what exactly Emmeline Vance did. If the murder occurred near number 10 Downing Street...
Why there?
And why is that a detail that's important to us right now? Was she a protector of the minister? Is there some other function that we're going to learn about later?
I think it was mentioned because it was significant that it was, like, sort of under the Muggle Prime Minister's nose, so to speak. But I think, that's a very good question. Like, why was she there,
Yeah, that's a great point that maybe she's the one that was to help keep watch, Because, well, what if she wasn't just a watcher, though? What if she was one of the unspeakables?
Maybe that's why we don't know.
See, I'm wondering if she, like, was onto some... I don't know, this doesn't sound like Voldemort, though. Like, I was thinking maybe there was some infiltration from his side, like, into the Muggle government. But that doesn't... That's not really how he operates, I guess.
Well, we know that there was, you know, the junior... what was that? Undersecretary or somebody had a bad reaction to the Imperius curse.
That's true, yeah. So they were trying to...
Shirley is his name, I believe.
I don't remember.
I know what you're talking about now. Yeah. So yeah, I guess that Voldemort was trying to...
I mean, all this
kind of
happened all at once. Kingsley.
Anyway. So maybe she was investigating...
And Kingsley gets assigned...
You know, something...
To protect the dude.
And or she knew, so, like, maybe she had figured out something or found out something, and they're like, oh, get her before she gets back, or...
Well, Amelia Bones is the one that they had found... And I think it was the Muggle authorities found with the doors locked from inside.
Well, here's Amelia Bones.
And that was the mysterious death there.
With all that and then losing Amelia Bones. Losing who? This is the Muggle Prime Minister. And then Fudge says, Amelia Bones, head of the Department of Magical Law Enforcement, we think he who must not be named may have murdered her in person because she was a very gifted witch and all the evidence was that she put up a real fight. But that murder was in the newspapers, said the Prime Minister, our newspapers and media. It said she was just a middle-aged woman who had lived alone. It was a nasty killing, wasn't it? It's had a rather lot of publicity. Fudge said, killed in a room that was locked from the inside, wasn't she? We, on the other hand, know exactly who did it, etc. Eileen Vance. Snape says in Chapter 2, I am not the Secret Keeper. I cannot speak the name of the place, meaning Grimmauld Place. You understand how the enchantment works, I think. The Dark Lord is satisfied that with the information I have passed him. It led, as you perhaps have guessed, to the recent capture and murder of Emmeline Vance, and it certainly helped dispose of Sirius Black. Now, capture? Yeah. Wait a second.
Capture, yeah.
And then they returned her to near 10 Downing Street?
Yeah, this is fishy.
Could they have captured her to get information out of her and then returned her once they had used
why would
all they could
they
from her,
drop her
no
there?
Brain?
I mean,
well, if she was the watcher over the Prime Minister or whatever, maybe they deliberately put her back there as a signal to Dumbledore that look what we can do. You know, it's a strategic placing of the body, like a symbol. You know, like in any mysteries or crime shows you watch. That's a, you know, symbolic thing sometimes, so maybe
that was a show of power.
Uh-huh. And then there was Emmeline Vance. Perhaps you didn't hear about that one. Oh, yes, I did, said the Prime Minister. It happened just around the corner from here, as a matter of fact. The papers had a field day with it. Breakdown of law and order in the Prime Minister's backyard.
Uh-huh. That's what I was saying. I thought that it was mentioned because, you know, sort of
they
slip it in,
it.
Like, as if it was important because... You know, because the Muggle Prime Minister thought it was important, but it might actually be a clue.
And then capture and murder. And if Snape's information was important, that means that they were trying to get her for a while. She had to have been an unspeakable.
Mm. Yeah.
They had
well, no, what do you
gotten...
think of this, though? What do you think of this? Emily Vance is the Prime Minister as Mrs. Figg is to Harry.
Like watching out for him, protecting him without him knowing?
They put these wizards there without them knowing as protection. It makes sense for them to be living close by.
Well, but that's kind of
Shacklebolt. Yeah, I was
going to
say, when
no
did Shacklebolt start?
Right.
Maybe he started after.
Well, Shacklebolt there started after this death.
You think?
Well...
Yes. Well, actually, he started there after the dude with the faulty Imperius curse, which happened at around the same time.
The new secretary in your outer office, and he says, I'm not getting rid of Kingsley Shacklebolt, if that's what you're suggesting. He's highly efficient. Gets to twice the work the rest of them, and he goes, that's because he's a wizard.
Zoinks.
A highly trained orator. Now, wait a moment. You can't just put your people in my office. I thought you were happy with Shacklebolt, said Scrimgeour coldly. I am, that's to say. I love it. I love the bumbling minister, I have to say.
Yeah. Good stuff.
But it doesn't say that that's a direct reaction to Herbert Chorley. He just says that he's the new secretary and then mentions Herbert Chorley separately, so.
Well, I mean, it kind of... Doesn't that make sense, though? If the one secretary leaves and now we suddenly have a new one, isn't that logical to think that he's a replacement?
It does, but I don't know that I'm relying on it. You know?
Okay. Well, I mean, weren't we talking about whether or not it had to do with, you know, Vance and her death? If Kingsley was the response to that, or was the response to the secretary Imperius curse? But it all happens around the same time. Which may have both influenced the decision to put Kingsley there.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're trying to figure out is if whether Emmeline Vance was the Prime Minister's Arabella Figg.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, basically, if her being there was no coincidence, if she was, you know, there on some mission.
But then again, she was captured. It sounds like she was pushed for information, killed in Astley. How do we know that she was captured at 10 Downing Street and not just placed there?
Well, yeah, that's
or near 10 Downing
we don't even know. I guess we don't even know if that was even her home to begin with.
And here's something I want to know. I mean, we obviously can't get into a whole what's Snape Steele discussion, but, you know, is he telling the truth? And if so, like, you know, I don't know what you guys think of him. Because I wouldn't think that, you know, if he is, like, working for Dumbledore, like, or does Dumbledore know that, like, Snape supposedly turned in Emmeline, you know, if that's true, and, you know, is that, like, acceptable casualties, or, like, that doesn't seem like something that Dumbledore would accept if, you know, to keep Snape's cover, he had to let him turn in someone else, or, you know,
well,
maybe, obviously.
That's what a lot of people are talking about right now.
Yeah.
And the lounge is that, you know, the possibility of, you know, first it was Dumbledore not dead, now it's, you know, Emily Vance not dead, Amelia Bones not dead. That, .com. That these are all staged deaths to protect
but it's
these people.
Like, yeah.
And
I have seen that too, and that's
for Ollivander and all that stuff. Which is a neat thought. But why these two? What makes these guys...
And it seems like, I mean, the way they describe it doesn't sound like something that could have been faked so easily. If, like, the Muggles were aware of, you know, the supposed murder, like, they must have found her.
Well,
or
yeah, I mean, that's the question of it right now, is that they find the bodies. But then I immediately think of
Sleeping
Azkaban, where, you know, didn't they, how did that work? Did they polyjuice or transform the Crouch mother in there?
Polyjuice.
Yeah.
Polyjuice.
His dying mother,
It's possible to leave a fake body, and we've seen it before in these books.
Yeah.
But, you know, did they polyjuice some other random dead person in there? then it's a stretch.
Yeah.
It would make more sense if they could transfigure it. But I don't know if you can transfer this something into a person.
Well, did they polyjuice Crouch's mother? I thought that they just didn't. The Dementors can't see. They just go by feelings. And so Crouch knew that.
No,
his
she
mother,
was.
You know.
I remember distinctly something about her, like, faithfully taking the potion until, like, she drew her last
breath.
Till
the end.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So I guess if you die like that, you stay like that?
Maybe
no,
it was
I
just
so
that, like, if people came, like, to, you know, how like,
Fudge
comes
or whoever.
By.
Yeah.
But, you know, then the Dementors just had the body sent out without really checking.
Yeah. So the Dementors, I can't picture Dementors doing, like, janitorial things like picking up bodies and putting them in a bag and sending it to where
they
have to be sent.
Honestly, book four is, like, an entire canon conundrum, like a million canon conundrums.
Yeah, it is.
There's so many little weirdnesses about that book, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. But, okay, so... Okay, I don't know that I really... quite understand why you would want to fake her death unless if she's so special or she possesses a special skill.
Well, what if it was
were they both Hufflepuffs?
See, now this is my thank you, John. This is where I was going with this because someone else that was murdered was Hannah Abbott's mother. Now we have no proof that Amelia Bones was a Hufflepuff, and we also have no proof that Hannah Abbott's mother was a Hufflepuff. But both of those people.
This seemed very Hufflepuff-y.
Offspring or relations, yes. and
Susan
and
Bones
just
was
say,
a pup.
Yeah, well, just say, what if one of those is actually the heir of Hufflepuff and Voldemort's cup?
And they speak badger tongues?
Well, or what if it's gone missing?
Right.
I know that sounds completely absurd, but what if it's gone missing and this was an attempt to get information?
That would be.
And
I still wonder about Zacharias Smith, though.
Yeah.
About whether he's, because... How could she do the Evans thing by accident and then again do Smith by accident?
But Smith.
Right.
She could get away with Smith.
I know. Yeah, but he's a Hufflepuff.
Yeah,
he's sort of this guy that gets mentioned now and then when
who
he doesn't
the
really need
Smith?
To be. Hepzibah Smith.
Oh, that's right.
Who
Hepzibah
had
Smith.
Had the cuff. You know?
Who was the descendant.
Who was all flirting with Riddle.
Yeah.
I just think that You know, I mean, from one perspective, you can just say, well, Voldemort carefully targeted these people because he wanted to instill his campaign of fear and cause disruption and panic and whatever. And then he just chose the other random people like Greyback when he went out and just randomly slaughtered people or whatever. But
that's just how you keep Greyback happy.
You know? Well, yeah, but it also adds to the fear and panic But what if it's all part of a plan, though, just to cover up a specific reason, not just, I don't know.
Maybe I definitely agree. I mean, you know, and the other thing is, if it's, the main reason I could think of, if there was a fake death, and I don't want to harp on this too long, but, you know, like, why this person would have been, why Emmeline Vance then, you know, maybe it wasn't like Voldemort was looking specifically for her, but Snape came to him and said, hey, I can get you information on this order member. And he's like, okay, let's capture her and kill her then. And, you know, somehow Snape, I don't know, they tricked it so that she wasn't actually dead and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, if it's like something where, I don't know if the Death Eaters are after specific people or if, you know, they're going after people who, you know, if they get information or, you know, some other opportunity to attack them. But yeah, this Hufflepuff thing is kind of intriguing.
I think it's one thing for Snape to be, you know, trying to look as though he's on Voldemort's team, to Voldemort. And, you know, it's another thing for him to go out of his way to just be killing random Order members.
Yeah.
And whether or not he had the opportunity here to, you know, give up this information or to, you know, commit any of this himself, a lot of people think it's more likely he was just kind of bluffing and taking credit for that murder just so he can say that he did and, you know, to get, you know, Voldy points.
Right.
But that's a bold thing to say to Bellatrix, who has a known relationship with Voldemort, so she can easily find that out. Not known relationship, but it's clear that they have some sort of special bond, you know?
Right.
Warm, fuzzy bond. How do you say that to Bellatrix, who may very well tomorrow reconcile with Voldemort and find out that Snape was lying and then invert his whole story. I mean, somebody in the forum said, Snape taking partial... I apologize, I don't have this person's name in front of me. It's just part of all our research. Snape taking partial credit for Sirius's death was Snape being opportunistic. Snape tends not to use outright lies. He's more of the insinuating, redirecting, misinformation kind of liar. But with Vance, Snape takes full credit for passing the information. I don't doubt this. So either he's Voldy's man and she's dead, or he was given safe information to pass and her death was staged by the Order.
Yeah.
But now I'm thinking, I wonder why they would have captured her. I mean, if Snape... You know, what could they learn from her that, you know, assuming that Snape is passing on all kinds of information that, I mean, he's kind of Dumbledore, trust him, you know, what are they going to get out of Emmeline Vance unless it's, you know, something that's specific to her or, you know, to maybe her job or to her heritage, like Sue was saying, or, you know.
Right.
Well, what's Voldemort's endgame in the 5th and 6th books? He wanted to displace the Muggle, I mean, he wanted to displace the Prime Minister.
Right.
Right? So maybe that was one more block towards the Prime Minister is getting rid of Vance and Bones.
Yeah.
He wanted to displace both seats of authority, the Muggle Prime Minister and the Wizarding. And it seems like Bones was a roadblock to the Wizarding Prime Minister, and Vance was a roadblock to the Muggle Prime Minister. So those two might be related.
Well, yes, and plus it wasn't... She was, Amelia Bones was partial towards, not partial, but she was friendly with, Dumbledore, so maybe that was another impetus for Voldemort, knowing it would hurt him if she's dead, you know? I don't know. It's really interesting.
Okay. Have we decided anything?
No.
This is a hard one.
We've got some good theories here. I mean, we can't ever decide anything until we have, you know, the big old Deathly Hallows on our laps.
So
we could make advancements at least. I feel sort of still lost on all of this.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm really liking
the idea that these people. Well, I mean, let's do final thoughts here because I think we have to ask the question whether or not they're even dead.
which I think is probably an easy question. And
okay. Well, the original question that we're answering is, what? Why did Voldemort target them specifically?
Or did he? Yeah.
That we should stick to. You know, or did he? Who goes first?
Oh, final thoughts!
I'll try. I think I'm just going to be boring and say I don't think that he targeted them specifically. They may have run a counter to some of his plans, but he was just, you know, trying to sort of create chaos and bring down the Muggle ministry, you know, start sowing terror in the Muggle minds of Muggles and wizards alike. And these were sort of grisly murders that would affect both sides, and so it was sort of opportunistic.
Well, I'm going to say that in Amelia Bones' case, she was a last bastion of integrity combined with power at the ministry. Nobody had her ethics and parity, and nobody was strong enough to back that up, so he wanted her out of the way and could only do it himself. And I think in the case of Emmeline Vance, she was close to the ministry, the Muggle ministry, and he wanted her out of the way to get closer to authority.
Mm.
Yeah, I think they did.
Right.
I'm going to go out on a limb here. This is just a theory that I'm a little, you know, fond of, even though I don't know how much water it holds, is the people who theorize that Scrimgeour could be Voldemort's man. Which, I mean, I know that Joe's talked about how there are different kinds of evil in the world, and it's not all just, you know, the good guys, the bad guys, there's gray areas, and there's people who are bad for different reasons, and kind of like the Rita Skeeter and all that nonsense. But I think, you know, if it's Voldemort's intention down the road to not so much topple the ministry entirely to the ground, but to take it over, then obviously one of the first things he's got to do is to knock off the people who would absolutely, by no means, have anything to do with that plan. And those would be those people, like you said, with the integrity,
right,
and, you know, the wise, you know, ones that have been there the longest, and knocking them off is the first step in that class.
And going with what you said, I would think that one of the final straws that got Fudge out of there and paved the way for someone like Scrimgeour was, you know, the death of someone like Amelia Bones.
Sure.
Yeah, he's undermining authority at every step. And he's taking Dumbledore's support network away from him as well.
Well, I think all of these are valid reasons, and I am inclined to agree with some. However, I think that they were not killed only for what position they held in relating to government authority, whether it be Muggle or magical, but it also has to do with their certain knowledge of Hufflepuff and the cup. I think it all boils down to the Horcruxes with Voldemort, and I think it had something to do with those Horcruxes of Hufflepuff. So I think.
All right.
Mm-hmm. All right then. That's our conundrum.
Not a bad canon conundrums.
Who could possibly figure
that out? We just say so ourselves. You could possibly figure that out. Are we returning next week with the super cool?
I don't want to promise. We're trying. I don't want to promise the holy canon conundrums, but
let's not promise it again. But do continue to send in your theories and questions and thoughts about that topic. And if we find some good stuff in the old inboxes, perhaps it will make it to the show itself and help us with our interview/discussion with Connie Neal.
Okay, guys.
Well, thanks, Jason.
Hey, no problem.
We're going to push on through the wrap-up, I suppose.
All right. I'll see you guys later.
Bye, Jason.
Later.
Bye.
Welcome to the end of Pottercast 73.
Oh, it's the end.
We have a lot to discuss, so we should get right into it.
Oh, gosh.
As soon as 72 came out last week, the post started appearing. You guys have been very anxious about the theory presented in last week's show. The theory was that Voldemort will go travel back in time, whether using a time turner or however, there must be another way.
Mm-hmm. DeLorean.
No.
Like a DeLorean, right. Which, interesting story, when I went to the first set visit, and we were sitting around with the trio, Dan Radcliffe was talking about Back to the Future, and he couldn't come up with the word, with the DeLorean. Yeah. And he was like 12, you know? So for him to even know Back to the Future, no. And somebody said the DeLorean. He was like, oh, that's it. That's the DeLorean. I don't know. It was just a very funny that he was 12 and he knew what the DeLorean was. Anyway.
That's cool.
Well, we haven't seen the rest of that Ford Anglia. I could get pimped out with
Ford capacitor. Right. Maybe it's got a flux capacitor. So anyway, the theory was that he would go back in time to October 31st, 1981, and be the person at Godric's Hollow, be the person to tell Dumbledore what happened, which explains why Dumbledore knows that Harry is going to be fine. He would have to stop himself from stopping Voldemort from killing his parents, which as Sue said, could also be the reason that Snape hates him so much, because he didn't save his mother. And having to watch him all those years knowing what would happen, you know? It's just exploded. You guys have had a million conversations, so we've got some great feedback for you here. Sue, why don't you read our first?
Well, Potter Brett says, "Well, my head now officially hates Pottercast for making it hurt so badly."
Oh,
that's the kind of stuff I have to say. I've loved going around seeing. I love seeing the theories explode from an episode of Potter. And I love that head hurting, crazy. Theorizing space that you can sometimes get into when there's a good theory.
But you know, but this is interesting because other people were like, we were talking about Snape and like one divine mum says, what if seeing the future, Harry, there is a reason Snape came over to Dumbledore's side because Snape didn't turn double agent until after Godric's Hollow, right? What if he turned because he knew he would be found out eventually? After all, I think Snape is always working the angle to his advantage.
What if the reason that Dumbledore trusts Snape is because something happens to make Harry trust Snape, and he tells this to Dumbledore of the past.
Yeah.
Saying no, Snape, you have to trust him. Right. And what if this was all? What if they knew some of what would be happening? He knew that he would have to die at this point. But then something very interesting. Our Scribby editor Pam, who goes by Connie Lane, said on this discussion on Divine Mum's Live Journal, which sorry we've been spying on you, said. Dumbledore has already kept things from Harry, and to have him turn out to have kept even more things, he doesn't like that. It would make Dumbledore a bit dishonest. He says that he doesn't know what really happened that night, and never tells any of it to Harry at all, even when he's supposed to be telling him everything at the end of Order of the Phoenix. Well, I don't think this means that Harry necessarily has to tell him everything, but it might be such a situation where he's only told a couple of details, but not the actual truth of what happened in the Hollow that night.
Yeah. But I don't think that that would make Dumbledore dishonest, like she says. And I
don't know. I think he could have as much information. Plus, he would be dishonest with... I mean, I'm a big proponent of if you make Dumbledore dishonest, it doesn't work.
Right.
But he could be dishonest with the reason. I mean, if you tell Harry that he's going to go back in time, you're screwing with everything again.
Yeah,
you know,
can't
it's
do that.
How do you? He already knows that it's going to happen because it already did happen. The same way Harry knew the Patronus was going to work because it already works.
Right. Exactly.
In three.
Exactly.
Well, you know.
And then maybe, if that was the case, then Joe probably would not have written the line, big dramatic, "I'm going to tell you everything" line, because. She didn't say that, then he could have just told part of it. But to have him say, "I'm going to sit down, you know, have a drop, I'm going to tell you everything." You know,
what?
Dumbledore isn't, you know, a liar.
But Dumbledore didn't tell him how he found out what happened to him.
No, he did not.
You know, so he clearly didn't tell him everything. Not everything. Yeah. And what if he did say to him, "You're going to go back in the past," and you know, why doesn't Harry say, "Okay, well, I'll just do that right. Why can't I just do that right now?"
Yeah.
What would stop Harry from doing it?
Exactly. He would want to, and but things have to fall out sequentially as they're meant to be. So he couldn't. So Dumbledore couldn't tell him.
I don't know. What? Here's the other thought I had. Here's the other thought. What if, you know how the only memory that Harry has is of James saying, "It's him. Take Harry and run."
Right.
What if Harry warned his parents? What if Harry said, this has to happen this way, but this is what's going to happen?
Oh my God, that's just devastating.
I don't know.
I mean, can you imagine?
Oh, I can't. Then again, Joe did say that Lily had no idea that her sacrifice would work the way it did.
Right. Right.
My brain's going to explode.
Well, that's not something that his parents had to actually recognize that it was him. It could have just been like a "who are you" moment. Why are you warning us? What's going on?
Because it always sounded like they knew he was coming. They knew he was looking for them, but it sounded like they weren't so surprised that he had broken through the Fidelius charm.
Well, I read a fan fiction a while ago. The premise was that Harry went back in time, like, weeks before Halloween night, and, you know, like, befriended his parents as, like, this other person, and, you know, when the Halloween came, like, he was, you know, he had all his plans of warning them, and then something happened, and then history repeated itself, and it was like this Darth Vader, no, moment, and...
It was like you can't escape time the way it's played out.
Yeah.
You can only try, but it's not going to happen. That kind of thing?
Pretty much.
I mean, I think that Harry making that choice not to would be horrible and devastating, but would be sort of where he's...
Yeah.
Where he's, like, understanding and accepting fate and accepting that there are things bigger than his personal sacrifice, you know? And that would be a sacrifice like crazy, you know?
I just don't know how likely it is, just because it goes against a lot of the big Joe themes. It's like the finality of death and, you know, action, reaction, cause and effect, and you can't go back and change the past when bad things happen. You have to move on and find other ways to
But we're saying he wouldn't.
That's exactly right.
He wouldn't change it.
Right.
We're not saying he would.
That he wouldn't. I mean, he
would even attempt to.
But no, but that would be a way.
So that's
for him
the thing.
To...
He would have to. Yeah. Right. Sorry.
No, that's
sorry,
right. We're exactly thinking the same thing. He would have to. I mean, this is a perfect way for him to learn to understand that. I mean, no matter what his powers are, there are things he just simply can't change.
Yeah. But to have, you know, her hero of the story, it's for that to be something that he would attempt to do. In the last book, where you'd think that he would have learned that lesson already.
Well, what if it...
No, we're saying that he's not going to attempt it, but that it'll be a big internal... It would be a big internal challenge for him to stop himself from attempting it.
Yeah.
You know?
But what if he must go back there regardless, though? It's not a question if he wants to, but he has to because something to do with the Horcruxes and destroying Voldemort. You know?
Yeah.
Maybe, you know?
I mean, there could be other reasons why he's there. I mean, not just because he wants to, if he figures out that he can. It's just, but why, you know?
And then somebody also made the point that what if he just extracts memory from himself?
Yeah, that tends
because
to...
he was a baby,
yeah,
he was there.
Sure.
You know? He has the memory, and as Joe explained... The pensive takes what's there, not what you necessarily can recall.
Yes, I think that pensive is going to play a lot of point. I think that's how we'll hear more from Mr. Dumbledore, too. I just think that.
Why hasn't Dumbledore thought to take the memory from Harry? Dumbledore has to know exactly what happened. He has to have taken it from... Like, you know?
How he did while Harry was sleeping.
Wouldn't you just love to be in Dumbledore's pensive, though, just for all of his other non-big crucial things just to see with his life? I don't know. I thought those are things I hope that she does if she ever writes that, you know, encyclopedia. Just, like, little details.
It'd take her so long to write something like that, but it'll probably come out in 10 years.
I'll wait for it.
I'll be glad that it does, but...
Yeah.
Like, she's just living her life and just casually writing things down as she remembers them and turns into a book one day.
Well, she has them all down, though. That's the thing. She's so meticulous. She has these... She speaks often about those, you know, those volumes and notebooks she has, you know. Okay.
Well, it was
awesome.
Seriously a mind-blowing...
Mm-hmm.
We have one other theory that I wanted to mention. From the Pottercast blog, Mrs. Demimsy Porpington says, "I almost choked on my 100% bran flakes when I heard the theory about Harry time-traveling back to Godric's Hollow. I have preached this to my husband all along. My theory states that Dumbledore knew that either the Potters or the Longbottoms would have to make the ultimate sacrifice to save their precious baby boys.
Mm-hmm.
He probably knew that Moldy would choose the Potters because, well, he is always right. Anywho, I think James gave the invisibility cloak to Dumbledore so Harry would be able to be there because he knew Harry would survive. Harry then told Dumbledore what happened, and he told Hagrid to get baby Harry. Maybe Hagrid even saw the older Harry while he was there." I don't think Hagrid could have kept that silent, actually.
Yeah.
"If the house in Godric's Hollow was almost destroyed, it could have been because the older Harry put up a fight there, too, after his parents had died. Maybe some lingering Death Eaters were there, too. It is the only theory that makes sense to my feeble mind, anyway. I think that it is absolutely incorrect to assume that time turners only go backwards in time, just because that is the only reason for which Hermione used it. And you can't tell me that some Mundungus tribe doesn't have an extra one sitting around. Remember those whirling and spinning things in the headmaster's office? Could one be a time turner? One never knows. Ah, God, my brain.
Yeah, I mean, I long believe that all the time turners are not destroyed. I mean, even though they were destroyed, that doesn't mean that they're...
Yeah. It'd be awfully convenient.
Yeah.
It's like all the time turners in all the world are just sitting, you know, in a basement in London.
But what she's done by smashing so many of them is making it imperative that they find one from a specific place or specific person. They can't just go to the ministry and get one.
Well,
right,
I will say the fact that she drew attention to the fact that they were destroyed lends to the idea that maybe we'll be seeing one in use again.
Yeah.
I do like the idea that it ties in with the invisibility cloak.
That would explain a lot, yeah.
What if Harry had a prank calling time phone that he could call the past and warn his past self?
Okay, well, we've sort of done a whole nother can of conundrums here, a whole nother mailbag or whatever here. So let's move on. Keep them coming, guys. We'll keep talking about good theories as long as they're good theories and the ideas are fresh. So
absolutely.
Keep talking about it, and we'll feature it here.
Yeah. Stay fresh. Keep it real.
We had a blog challenge last week.
Oh,
good.
Yes.
We did. We asked people to go to their bookstores and find out if they were giving out misinformation about the release of Deathly Hallows. Some of you have sent us some really funny stories. First of all, there's a video. There's a YouTube video. We'll link that in the show notes, which is hilarious.
There's a second YouTube video.
There is?
About what?
Huh.
Well, albeit slightly off topic.
Well, that's next. But also, our listener, Julie, she went to her store.
Yay.
It's her nearby store. Picked a clerk at random. She said, "Excuse me, hi there. I was just wondering, have you found out the release date for the 7th Harry Potter book yet?" They gave her a blank stare and said, "There's a Harry Potter book coming out." She said she got her fired.
Oh, no.
Why would you work at a... I hope she didn't really get fired.
Yeah.
It was funny.
Funny.
Oh, so funny.
And I have to read this next one because I think it's my favorite one ever. It's from listener Sigrid. Said, "After school, I went to town with the printed post from Leaky. I'd highlighted the part where the Bloomsbury person said that they hadn't gotten the manuscript yet, and so I started going to bookstores. The first I went to answered almost correctly, 'I don't know, but I've heard it will be coming out this summer.' The man in the second store said, 'I don't know, I've heard the English one will come out July 13th. I was annoyed. So I went on. In the next one, the girl checked with her computer and didn't find any date. I was happy about that, got some food, and went to the second to last one. The woman in there called someone else who said, 'I've heard the English one's coming out in June, but I don't know about the Norwegian.'
That's important.
And since I didn't feel like telling the woman who was standing there that she was wrong, I went on. The fifth and last bookstore was the one I think would be Melissa's favorite. Not only do they have a coffee machine with free coffee and tea for their customers, but they also gave the right answer. I'll probably DH there."
Buy it there, yeah. That's awesome.
Aww. It's Norwegian.
Love it. Global, baby.
Norwegian.
The Norwegians.
Well, I don't know when the real one's coming out, but do you want to know when the Norwegian... like, what? Random.
Oh. Speaking of random, there's a lot of random dates out there. August 9th, even one.
Yeah, what did Verminia say about that, Sue?
I'm going to start dancing that it's going to be on my birthday. Just because the date is as good as any other date, I think.
Okay, but Sue, what did Verminia say?
There's
another one.
She goes, I went to a bookstore right after listening to this challenge, and I asked the guy working there when the book was going to be released. He replied that the book would be released on August 9th, 2007. I cleared it up for him by telling him he's wrong. I even gave him a link to Leaky to go check it out. But this is the worst part. I saw him throw out the paper with the address to Leaky in the garbage as soon as I walked away. So I went over to where he was standing and told him, "You know what? Believe me or not, but I'll definitely be back here on August 9th, and we'll talk then."
I love it. I love the dude.
Verminia, I love the dude. I think I want to make Verminia be the winner.
That's awesome.
I love the tude.
Yeah.
She's just like, we'll see on August 9th if you're right.
Right.
I love it.
Congratulations, girl. That's awesome.
That's great.
Mind your tude.
Yeah.
Contact us. We'll do the whole prize thing.
Good.
17.
We do have one librarian who chimed in.
Awesome. Librarian. Gotta love it.
A librarian who, on her blog, said that she's really frustrated about the librarians who are giving out the wrong information. I'd rather give an "I don't know" and a web address to a customer than an answer that isn't true. So, Pottercast people, this is a blog challenge to take seriously. Make sure your local librarians and booksellers aren't giving out misinformation.
Right.
We agree.
And while you're at it, it's rolling like falling.
It is. But don't tell our lawyers.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was our blog challenge for this week. We've brought back the blog challenge. There's a link on Pottercast.com explaining it all, but basically, you talk about Pottercast on your blog, you use our information and pictures and flash players or whatever on your blog. Every week we will go search the blog. It could be on a specific theme like last week, it could be for nothing. If we like what you've done, if we like what you've said, you could win something from thecauldronshop.com, you could win, I don't know, a t-shirt if we have any left. Life says Zabi, you know, you could win stuff. So blog about us, talk about us, tell your friends, and we will find you. On a similar vein, if you friend us on MySpace and you make us one of your top friends and leave us a message letting us know that you have, you can get a shout out. So Sue, why don't you take care of those this week?
Okay, we got messages from Melissa, Kurt, Angelica, Renora, and we've heard from Amanda, Lisa, Dana, Hannah, Kathy, Lucy, Holly Horkery, and Warrior of Reason. And I want to say one actual thank you to James, because of MySpace, sent us a great tip this week, too. So thank you to James, too. Y'all rock. Go MySpace. Love it.
Yay.
Well, we're almost running out of things to talk about this week, but we did get an interesting video also.
We got a stupendous video, as this is week 3 of John's World Famous Impersonation Month. Of the lovely Luna Long, Lovegood. And,
You did not just do that. In the very first podcast John was ever on, he called Luna Longbottom.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sure shot.
That was a nice little throwback.
But no, I can happily report I've since improved my impression. I've gotten only about a dozen and a half constructive criticisms this week.
Aww.
But, and a very important one.
Oh. Yes.
Which one?
Well,
somebody gave you some very good advice, didn't she?
Yes. Apparently, not only is she not completely annoyed at how rubbish I am at it, but she gave me some tips on it herself. The lovely Ivana Lynch says that we both do it pretty well, but just so I can be a little closer to hers. Let me get this. The Cloud Thestrals.
That's not different at all from last week.
Last week was the Cloud Thestrals.
No, you gotta lower your voice a little bit.
The end.
I was very surprised. I was very surprised listening to it that it was lower than I thought it was.
Yeah.
The Cloud Thestrals. Okay. Well, we have a YouTube video which pasted her saying it and John saying it over one another, and
yes,
it's really hilarious. We'll link to it in the show notes.
That's
Ivana's been a great sport. She says she's finding it funny. So, also we got an email that I want to mention.
Aww.
it's my favorite podcast email ever. John, do you want to do the honor?
From Tony.
From Keeley.
Oh. Hello, I enjoy listening to Pottercast, but lately I have been really getting sick of Melissa's attitude towards John. Yes, John is often off-topic and can make stupid jokes, but Melissa is so rude and mean to him I can hardly stand it. It makes it hard to listen to the show. I'm sure she doesn't mean it to be mean, and they are probably good friends, but on the show she comes across as annoyed, angry, and rude. She constantly shuts down whatever John is trying to say and refuses to enjoy any humor he may add to the show. I would find the show much more enjoyable if everyone would laugh and get along. Sue's attitude towards John, acceptance of his somewhat annoying jokes, and enjoyment of his personality is something that Melissa should consider adopting. Sincerely, a concerned listener.
Whose email?
Name
is Keeley. Dude.
Sue is my best friend, I gotta say.
Yeah. Yeah, John, I hate you. Do you know that?
That's you.
If you guys heard the stuff that doesn't get in the show.
We've actually taken to muting Melissa's mic during my jokes.
If I gave in to John's jokes, the show would never move anywhere.
Yeah.
I take the hit. I don't laugh.
So
that we can move on.
On a similar note, we got a very, sad email from Tony Maudsley, who didn't understand why Melissa didn't think his jokes were funny. And he didn't know of something wrong that he did. And I assured him, no, there's nothing you did, Tony. Don't worry about it. Melissa just doesn't laugh at things that are funny. And then he thought that was better. He was.
See, okay. One of us has to be. I laugh constantly all the time at John and at Melissa and everybody. All I do is laugh. So we need someone to kind of like move things along.
And sometimes, I'm very sorry, Keely, but sometimes the things that John says are, you know, pushing it.
We have a standing order with the editors to remove most of the bad jokes.
They don't do very well at it, apparently.
They've been purposely letting some slide just because.
No.
Just for fun.
Are you kidding? You guys have no idea how good friends we all are. Keely, seriously. This is a tight-knit group over here. But you'll thank me. One day, I'm not going to do it. That's what we're going to do, our April Fool's show or something. I'm not going to stop John from any of his jokes. I'm going to let the conversation go, and the show will be 4 hours long, and it will be the most pointless thing. And then we'll start getting emails going, you guys have to move the show along. You're so, you know, we'll get emails to the opposite.
I'll be the straight Melissa type. And,
okay.
And Melissa can be...
Sue, and then Sue can be me.
Sue's going to do the John.
Oh, but see, I can laugh. I don't tell good jokes. I just like to laugh. So, I mean, if I can do a show without laughing, that would be a miracle right there. That would be like, whoa.
April 1.
Oh, I wouldn't like that show. I need Sue to laugh and enjoy herself.
Yeah. I do.
Okay, people. Well, it's been fun.
Is it the end?
It's been the end for a while. It's been a long, long wrap-up.
Oh, gosh. I mean, these shows here, these in the 70s here have been brilliant shows, but gosh, the 73 is probably the best 73 of the week so far.
Well, this week's blog challenge, continue spreading the word, continue telling the bookstores, continue making the signs. Mikey made a sign that he held up in a Barnes & Noble that I'm going to put online shortly. Continue spreading the good word that we have no idea when Book 7 is coming out, and that as soon as there's an announcement, it will be in every news media in the world, so you really have nothing to worry about.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Don't use any spray paint, especially if you're at Borders.
Yeah, don't do that. Especially if you're at Borders. Okay, people. Bye.
Have a good week, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Toby is free.
Oh, and about time, too.
We've missed it.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great Scott, no wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.